The choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello! My name is Stephen Briggs. I am Chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 138, from 30 to 40. A decade of lessons, learning, and growth. I am recording this on the last day of my 30s. This is it. Tomorrow is my birthday. And I level up to level 40 tomorrow. And so I wanted to take this as an opportunity to kind of look back and reflect on things that I've seen, things that I have learned about, whether it's about myself, what I feel like I've learned about the world, and some of the topics that frankly are a cross-section with a number of things that clients also experience and we talk through in our sessions. And so I have to say that this last decade, and it's been incredibly adventurous and fun and challenging and painful, and it has run the whole gamut, where I felt like my 20s were more about that professional sense of discovery, getting out there, and then wham, the Great Recession hit. in this case, from 30 to 40 was about, really, I think, building an identity, a sense of self, on a number of fronts, who you are as a person to a degree, who I am as a professional. In fact, the matter is, this practice 5 years ago didn't exist. Just over 7 years, and I didn't exist as a financial professional. So it's very interesting. Like I said, this last decade has had some very interesting lessons. But there are a few key themes that I want to talk through this episode. So this may feel a little bit like wandering, but there is a point to it at the end here. And so without further ado, I think one of the first things that I think about, and I'm kind of walking chronologically a little bit here, is and this goes back to what I just said a minute ago, taking the lessons of exploration in this last decade to define who I am and what I stand for. Now, who I am, I think I've always been a coach. I've always been someone that values volunteerism, helping others. You see something, you see a need, or you see someone that needs something, you try to help them, right? That's in the fiber of my being, and that goes back to growing up and my household and how my parents and so forth would particularly my mom would really take to that. But taking the lessons of exploration here to define who I am and what I stand for. And there are a couple of key moments that I think about that happened. The first one, and this is probably one of the most courageous and maybe dumb, but courageous things I did. I worked for several years in a franchise company. I'm not going to say where because, frankly, I don't need any blowback. But I worked for several years working for a franchisee who, when they hired me on, was hiring me on at a time where, frankly, their business was probably within a year of closing. Just looking at the financials, it didn't make sense. And our team, over several years of working for that franchisee, turned that business around to a point where it became very profitable. And we're talking 20 to 25% profit. At which point, for the first time in 4 years, I asked for raises for myself and my team. And when we got none of them, and those profits, which were in excess of six figures, are leaving, and those franchisees are doing a day or 2 days a year on, say, a year worth of work, I said, maybe if I leave, maybe we can afford to pay our people better, because we were paying our people well below market. They were there because they loved to work. They loved doing what they were doing, but that doesn't mean you get to take advantage of them. And we were, at that point, in my opinion, taking advantage of our labor. So I left. I did not have at that time a clear, this is going to be my job, or this is the way I'm going to succeed. But what I knew is I couldn't be a part of that. And I think that's something that a lot of people, frankly, couldn't make that call. Because it really takes an awful lot of courage and maybe a little bit of stupidity. But to be able to look at your job, and at least I had some money saved. Like, I wasn't completely unprepared. But to sit there and look at a thing and go, you know, I refuse to be part of an organization that does not value either. If you're treating your customer poorly and or treating your team poorly, and usually if you're treating one, you're treating the other badly as well, the answer is it's time to move on. And so when I just refused at that point and said, I'm not going to work for a company that does that. I'm not going to do that. And so I said, so what I ended up doing eventually was moving from Michigan to Chicago. Now, I had lived for a little bit of time in the Detroit area. But to be honest, Chicago is 10 times that size. And so moving to a city that is 10 times the size of any metro I'd ever lived in, it's kind of nuts, if you think about it. And I had, at that point, yes, I had a contract lined up. I had work to do. But it is a very big lifestyle change going from one of those to the other. Moving away considerably from family and friends, although I had some friends in Chicago when I moved in. I have more now, which is great. But I also knew that, at the end of the day, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. The city had, I felt like a lot of opportunity to offer. I felt like the contract I had to offer, there was a lot I liked about it. And so I came to Chicago. I had a contract. I worked through that contract, and I was doing some other work as well in the gaming space, hobby gaming and conventions and running big events and that type of thing. And what became very clear, in that time, was that my ultimate desire or goal was not just to work for a company, but to lead one. And so after about a year and a half working for a company in Chicago, it was, like I said, it was very clear that that was where I was at. And so that meant I needed to take a different path at that point in order to realize that goal. I really didn't know what I wanted my business to be in, quite frankly. So I knew I wanted to open a business, start a bit something, but I didn't know in what. And that's what led to, as I was talking through with friends and so forth, one of my friends who I had been helping with their finances for years, just as a hobby, said to me, hey, this thing that you've been helping me with, I wouldn't have had savings, I wouldn't have had a retirement, I wouldn't have any of this if you hadn't helped me. Why don't you do this? We need more people like you doing this. If that conversation hadn't happened, I don't know if this all happened, but it did. So we'll take luck. Luck is fine. But at that point, I said, you're wrapping up all these experiences from education to and being an entrepreneur and running a business. And even, working for that franchisee, I learned how to run a business top to bottom. But the other part of it, though, too, was to say, and also the challenges I personally faced. My finances after post-recession were not good. I was not good. I really had no idea about any of this regarding, the role of money, investing, saving, all the topics that we now talk about habitually here in the blog and everything else that I've now done tons and tons of research and have a master's degree in. I knew nothing about, really, if you go back 13 years, 12 years ago. And I look at that journey, even over the last decade, and there has been an incredible amount of growth, but all those experiences have wrapped up to form this thing that now serves 200 households. I have 2 full-time employees, and that's nuts. And we're kicking butt, and we're moving ahead. It's great. But these lessons of exploration have now defined who I am and what this business is about, how we act, how I act as an employer. That when I'm hiring people for my team, I'm not satisfied just giving them, oh, we're paying okay. No, we're going to make sure you're paid well. We're going to make sure you have good healthcare benefits. We're going to make sure we match that retirement. We're providing a master's degree, years two and three of you working for the firm, without a cost for my team members. Why? Because I want a better team. That's going back to my educator days. That's my music educator, Jack Williamson, Central Michigan University. You want a better band, get better players. I did that when I was teaching. I'd sit there and teach private lessons till 7, 8 o'clock at night. Why? For free, mind you. Because I didn't want to wait a decade to get a better band. Same thing here. I can either, choose not to develop people and probably pay 50% more for people that probably aren't as good. Or we can build them from the ground up. And we have people that are completely holistically well taken care of. And serve our clients really well because they've learned, they've received a comprehensive education and have been supported that entire time. And they're not, and the other thing too is looking at the world and not having, we don't do the commissions thing, sales thing, revenue sharing thing. All these things create abuses in the financial world. So being able to avoid the pitfalls as well. But that's all those lessons of exploration. To inform now, this is who we are, what we stand for, and that serves everyone really quite well. A second bullet point, then, and I've got six of them here, so I'll try to keep the next one under 8 minutes. But this past decade has been the start of what I expect to be a trend facing up to personal losses. Losses, especially, I hate to say it, the last 6 months, but there were bouts of losses where there was a period in 2016, 2017, where I lost a couple of uncles, friends, losing both of my remaining grandparents this last decade. And then in the last year, losing friends and clients of mine to cancer, to COVID. Losing my cat, Chopin. That just happened a couple weeks ago. He had been with me 15 and a half years. He'd been with me since my teaching days before I was, let go. Back in 2000, I got him back in January of 2008. And we just lost him in the last couple of weeks. And then 6 months ago, losing my mom. It's tough. I'm sick of losing. But the hard part is that doesn't stop, guys. I'm going to keep aging and people are going to keep dying. I might be one of them. I don't know. So there is certainly a mounting pressure on how to digest and how to accept loss as a part of living. And I think that that's a challenge that a lot of people that are millennials are starting to come to grips with, but are really going to have to start coming to grips with in the next decade. Because as we continue to age and our parents only get older, that's just actuarial science at work. A certain number of people will die and that percentage increases as we age. And so how do we handle that? Yes, on the, on a personal level, on a financial level, making sure we're prepared, have a playbook. At least that's, with my mom, as tough as that was, that playbook existed. The wills existed, the healthcare instructions existed, and thank goodness they did, by the way. Those healthcare instructions didn't exist, they would not have followed my dad's directions. It was incredibly clear from that experience that those doctors would have carved up my mom like a turkey when all she wanted to do was be left to die. That's tough. It's tough to say. But what's even tougher is the idea that someone would ignore that wish. And statistically, they do, unless you have paperwork in place that legally says, no, you cannot. You will follow this. And so that's but loss is challenging. Loss is at any age or level or whatever. But I think particularly when it starts hitting the close home front. And you say personal cat, and you go, yeah, that cat, God, that cat has gone through my entire career. every job I've had since college. My cat Chopin and Retto, who's still alive, and she's doing well. She's the pretty girl of the house. But it's really challenging. And you have to have a way to kind of digest it and absorb, you know. It's not to say don't feel sad. Absolutely feel sad. But also accepting that this is a part of living. How we make peace with that is important. A third bullet point here, tempering the flame. So you may have figured out that I have a relatively opinionated and fiery personality. And that's not gone away. But what has started to emerge is understanding that flame can be both very constructive and it can be very destructive, depending on how it is used. And what I would say, and this is probably professionally one of my bigger regrets, is I'd say in my earlier 30s, that emotional reaction, in an effort to lead and be energetic and try to push things to be better or excel, simultaneously I was breaking some trust. And frankly, acting in a way where if I was on the outside of it, I wouldn't have wanted to be around me. There was an ego to it. There was a... it's one thing to have a fieriness to it. It's another, and have some energy and excitement. But this went beyond this. This got to a point where I have to look back and evaluating myself, go, that was just mean sometimes. That was just, it was too much. It was too much, and it wasn't constructive. It wasn't okay. And so... it's one thing to be passionate and to believe in what you stand for and everything else, but other people sometimes, they got to work with you, and you don't put, you give, really give them the same equity of bandwidth that you're giving yourself. The end result of that is you're probably going to hurt them. And so what I started to kind of, I think in this last few years, especially own brand, own business, is understanding that there is a lot of energy that is wasted in anger, in being, whether it's engaging in drama on social media, whether it's just being mad. There's a lot of things that try to get us in the world to get mad, to get frustrated, to get into that sort of reactionary immediate self and then act on it. And frankly, most of them are driven, have their motivation is to create engagement and boost profits as a result. And the more I recognize that, the more I realize just how much, frankly, on the flip side, just how much good can be done being exactly the opposite of that. And so the last few years, I feel like I've done more work on myself and more work with people around me in channeling that energy, being able to identify it, and understanding how to make it constructive. I think energy is good. Energy can bring change and growth, but you have to harness it in a way, and you have to avoid the temptation, because the problem with reacting is it feels good. When you react and you do something, oh man, you love when you sit there and you see something you don't like on social media and you hit them with that right cross and boy, that feels good to tweet that message, that be that snarky whatever on the internet. Except, did that actually affect change? AFFECT, affect change. And the answer is no. What it did, it made you feel good. It probably pushed the recipient of that away. And anyone watching is watching a pissing match. And you both smell like a skunk at that point. You get into a pissing match with a skunk, you both stink. So it's understanding that there's... And frankly, you both look really immature too. Where if you want to affect change, that isn't the way to do it. You want to affect change, you go out in the world and you affect change. You go do things to make this a better place to live in. Jawboning on the internet. Useless. Funny enough, as I post a podcast on the internet, but I mean, humor me on the dissonance here. But I think channeling that energy towards constructive uses is important. And I think, you know, to that end, and this will jump on my next point, but finally, in order to channel that energy, I think you have to find peace, internal peace. And I think that that peace has to be in solitude, by oneself. It's not finding peace because you have a partner. It's not finding peace because you have a whatever. It's finding peace in yourself, being able to be comfortable in your own skin and value yourself and set time for yourself. Which leads to point number four, the value of quiet. The world is so noisy. It is constantly begging for our reactions. And if you just want evidence of that, look at your phone and how many notifications you had in the last 24 hours. Constantly poking us for immediacy of attention. And I'm just going to say this, it's unhealthy to be constantly engaged, to be constantly at high adrenaline level without the ability, giving ourselves the ability to process information. Frankly, we're dumber when we're in this mode. We have this beautiful part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex that processes longer-term information, that works ideas out. But when we react and react and react and react, that prefrontal cortex gets blocked by a part of our brain that wants to be fight or flight all the time. And so you actually, especially in this world that wants us to react so much, we have to be real deliberate about the information we take in, giving ourselves space to process it, to see what is going on, and to be in a place and a moment for ourselves to digest it and own whatever that outcome is or whatever we want to be and identify who we are. I'm gonna lean back on, it was an interview, I think it was in 1997, between Charlie Rose and Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. And even then, Mr. Rogers was opining on how noisy the world had become. Now, mind you, I think if it was noisy in 1997, fast forward 25, 26 years, oh my Lord, how noisy it is today. But there's Mr. Rogers, and the quote, "Real revelation comes through silence," unquote. Real revelation comes through silence. Do you give yourself time to not hear anything, to not say anything, to just think? I have found so much value in building into my day, usually at the beginning of the day, some time for some reading and just silence. I can't encourage it enough. And I know the world's busy. And I know it might mean waking up 15 minutes early or half hour early, making that cup of coffee or whatever it is you got to do. But my goodness, my world is infinitely better. And I am better at things because I do give myself opportunities to be not doing things. To not be answering things, responsible for things, engaged in anything. And just letting my brain think wherever it goes. Doesn't matter. Or it could think about nothing. And that's great too. But to just allow silence to be a part of your life. Point number five, the value of patience. In that first part of that decade, you know, I talked about tempering the flame and how I could go from energized to, frankly, frustrated pretty fast. And what I didn't have, I think, in my heart of hearts, you can understand an idea like compounding, but it's another thing to, in your heart of hearts, believe in it. I've gotten to see more the value of just allowing things to happen and giving things time to work themselves out. That is far easier said than done. Because again, we have a world that is pushing us to be exactly the opposite of that, to react to everything. You must take action. Here's your information. This is, and it's rarely, there are very few things I think anymore, like short of a medical emergency or someone has attacked our country and we have to there are just very few situations that actually require a reaction or a response immediately right now. And anyone who does require that response typically has an agenda of their own. So when you see that, that should be a warning bell in your head. Huh, they said I have a deadline or a timeline or whatever. That usually means I'm getting suckered. That usually means they're taking advantage of me in some way. There is enormous value in being patient with your decision making, with how you implement something. And it doesn't mean you're standing idly by, but it does mean you study. It does mean you constantly be prepared. And then when you go and move, move consciously, deliberately, and methodically. If you can do these things and you can implement them in your daily life and your professional life, you're going to be better at living. You're going to be so much better at living than most people, because patience is not valued in this world right now. It really isn't. There is a lot of energy and attention given to doing without having a measured, and this is how we execute on that. And the other thing is that what you know now may not mean anything if your goal is far away. So, for example, if a company we're invested in has one bad quarter or a challenging quarter or whatever, that doesn't mean the company's ruined or the world's terrible or, oh, this is going to start a downtrend. Better look at the facts. Look at the whole of what's kind of going on. And see if you, if really you understand everything that's happening or if there's a larger story. For example, when the market dropped last year, you know, the S&P was down at 1.23%. Our portfolio was down almost 35% at one point in October of last year. I decided in November to do a study of how the companies were performing that we were holding in our portfolio. And what I found was, while the portfolio was down 35%, the companies we were invested in, their bottom line profit to shareholders was up almost 24% from a year prior. That's a big difference. One of these things is suggesting the world's terrible, and the other is suggesting the world's pretty darn good. And one of these things is based on what human sentiment is and what people are willing to pay for something right now. That's your stock price. And the other is based on how much money they made. That's accounting. So it's one of those things where the consumer is voting one way and the ownership is voting the other. And one of these two realities is correct, especially when they're that far apart. And so experience in my mind is, well, in that case, usually it's sales are correct and ownership and what people want to own is wrong. And so we sat. And so what's happened? Well, if you bought in and the strategy at the start of last year, you are now ahead of every major benchmark. That's where you're at right now. Are we still down from a year ago? Yeah, we are. But doing considerably better than the index investor. And at the same time, looking at this and going, okay, so what is the lesson here? Well, these things take time. We're in a strategy for years, years and years and years. I want to be investing in these companies for years. Many of these companies have been in our portfolio since day one and have never left. why they're that good. What they're doing is that compelling. They're making that much money. But that doesn't mean they're valued the same at all times. I think about Apple in 2018. That was down like 15% that year. But if you held on to it, basically over the last 5 years, I'm pulling it up here now as I'm talking, 5 year performance on up 303%. Yet if you bought it on this date and held on to it till the end of the year in 2018, you'd be down 4, 5, 6%. You go, Steven, this isn't that good of a company. Yeah, just you wait. We're not playing a short-term game. You have to have patience. There's a lot of value. And I will say this, mark my words on this. The more people become hyperbolic, the more and the sort of hyperthyroidism occurs, where we're constantly reacting to everything in the world, the more people act that way, the more value there is, in my opinion, in acting exactly the opposite. I think the Warren Buffett approach to the world is going to make people, it will make people far more money and build far more wealth in this world just by virtue of how much churning behavior occurs when you're reacting all the time. I think there's a lot of opportunity in that. But you have to be patient. That's hard. As Buffett talks about, it's not a 160 IQ game. It is a personal management and behavior game to an extent. A lot of value in patience. The last thing I want to talk about, and this is fairly personal, but I do want to dig into it, is to love and value others. As I talked about earlier, this last decade has had a number of personal losses, including, most importantly, to, you know, me, obviously, my mom. I have to admit that I have been uncertain for a while how my mom's health would progress. There were definitely some issues I was aware of. And so, you know, in the back of my mind, I understand that everyone has an expiration date. And we don't know what it is. We don't know. I could go and get in a car and get hit by a drunk driver. And that could be it. I don't know. Or I could live till I'm 100. I don't know that either. But even with my mom, I always treated conversations and treated those moments like they could be the last one I ever had. And so calling on a consistent basis, having conversations, asking the questions I wanted to ask, and so on. You know, I look back and I don't have much in the way of regrets regarding that. You know, because I guess I've always had in the back of my mind, Steven, you just don't know. You don't know how long anyone has, really. So I would impress upon you that not to treat the ability to have those conversations, to not take it for granted. That if you want to have those experiences, if you want to share, you want to go on a family vacation or whatever, you go, well, maybe we put it off to next year. I hate to say it, but even if you say, okay, financially, the thing we want to do might be too expensive, then do something smaller, but get everyone together. Do your best to have those opportunities, to have those moments. Because it won't matter where you do it or how you do it, but that you're all there and get to do a thing together is huge, if that's something you value. I would encourage you to work hard to enrich those around you, and by the same token, surround yourself with people that enrich your life. Don't surround yourself with people that want to take away from you, that want to draw negativity toward you, that frankly will never be there to contribute. And I'm not saying everyone has to contribute to everything, but I do think that when you are around people that try to support you, that helps you be more supportive of them and those around you. But I also think having a mindset of almost having an active sonar or active radar, look for opportunities to help others. Mr. Rogers used to always say, always look for the helpers. And so I'd encourage you, It's a tough world we live in. Instead of, and this goes back to the social media thing, instead of jawboning about the change you want to see, go out there and be some of it. Go out there and do a thing. Go volunteer. Go out and help people. Go out and support people. We need more people doing things, not just saying that things ought to be done. We have 20 million influencers and personalities who want to tell people the way the world is, including myself, I guess, here on this podcast, to be fair. Although our business, and me by extension, we look for ways to help people. For example, we prepare taxes at cost for a nonprofit that helps combat recidivism. We work with people that are formerly felons. And now they're changing their lives, they're getting their life together in order. But one of the big things that can really trigger relapses and things like drugs and so on can be stuff like having to do your taxes, being frustrated, then getting notices and letters and so on to take that pressure off of them, to help them have a chance to be much more successful as a result is huge. It's a big deal. Our work we do with Extra Life in helping raise funds for sick kids and families in need. Kids are the most vulnerable population. They can't go out there and earn a check to help themselves. They can sometimes be hit with some just grisly diseases that the pharma industry has no profit motive to try to solve. Well, why not build some resources and help those kids get the treatments, those families get the treatments they need for their kids, and work on the cures so these kids can have healthy lives throughout their lives. That's pretty sweet. And so I encourage you, do things. Don't see things, then point at the things, and text about the things, and then go on to watching Netflix. Be a helper. And Mr. Rogers finally said, always look for the helpers. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope. Being a helper is not only a part of the action of helping and working to help, solve a problem. But you are being a beacon and a signal to others that there's hope. And in a world with a lot of challenges, and we'll probably continuously have challenges for the duration of all our lives, we need some hope. And so you being out there, being a helper, helping others, is a beacon of hope to those around you. You have actually a lot of individual power to influence this world in a very positive way. Even if that's on a very local level, we need more helpers. I encourage that from you. With that, I hope that these six lessons, ones of exploration, facing up to personal losses, tempering ourselves to who we are, finding quiet, valuing patience, and loving and valuing others. I hope that these kind of vignettes were helpful and insightful. It's been one heck of a decade. And honestly, I'm very excited for the next. One of my friends, I sat there and said, I was leveling up to 40 soon, and they said, well, here comes the bell curve. And I just said, I hope my life isn't a bell curve. And I hope I'm nowhere near the middle of that. I hope it's a giant parabola and it just keeps getting better year by year, decade by decade. And that's my energy about it. That's my attitude about it. And so, with that, I'm looking forward to many more levels, many more years, many more decades of an amazing thing we're all getting to experience together. To which I just say, I love you all. I love the world. And here's to more growth, personally, professionally. Here's to all of us having collective success. And if there's anything I can do or our team can do, we're here for you. We're here for you now. We're here for you a year from now. We're here for you 5 years from now. Whenever you're ready, we're here. And we want to help. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, And if you get a chance to drop a message in and wish a happy birthday, I appreciate it as level 40 begins tomorrow. Have a wonderful week, and we'll catch up with a fresh episode of Money is Personal again soon. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.